As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hear that smack of the bat. Welcome to No Bunts, the podcast for the casual baseball fan here on The Athletic Baseball Show. I'm Tass Mellis in studio in Atlanta, and with me is super producer JD.
Hello.
Hi, JD. And with us all season long, coming from Taiwan, it's Joel McMillan. Joel, in Taiwan, but a new baseball stadium behind you as you bring us a new stadium every week. Where are you, Joel?
Tass, we're south of you, very far south of you.
Very?
In Atlanta.
Very far south. It looks like the old Marlins Stadium, is that right?
Tass, you would be correct. It's Pro Players Stadium in Miami.
Mm-hmm. It's quite bright.
It is.
I do got to say that Lone Depot Park now is superior. Am I correct in saying that?
It's hard for me to judge because I haven't been to either one. Wow. But Pro Players Stadium is just so ugly and gaudy as a baseball stadium. But I like it just because, the empty seats and it's so bright and orange. Yeah, it's like, let's mix it up. Let's go Pro Player.
Thank you. I appreciate you mixing it up every single week here on the show. You can watch us and see Joel Stadium on The Athletic Baseball Show on YouTube every Wednesday. Let's get to some quick podcast business here. We got to do what we got to do. Before we jump in, I want to tell you about New York Times Audio, a new iOS app for New York Times news subscribers. It's got our show, plus other great podcasts from The Athletic, exclusive shows, narrated articles, and more. New York Times Audio, download it now at nytimes.com/audio app. nytimes.com/audio app. All right, done with that. Coming up on this program, Joel, we've got a great one. We're past the quarter mark of the season, so we'll hand out some grades to teams. We are recasting the TV show Succession with baseball figures because we're so excited for the series finale coming up this weekend. Series and season finale. It's sad. It's sad. But we'll pay a little ode to it a little bit later on. But first, as we often do, the five best things in baseball this week. All right, baby. I'm keeping it local with this first one because I'm excited to watch this guy game in and game out. Ronald Acuña is officially back. That injury way in the rear view. This guy is just so exciting to watch. I don't know if you saw on Monday, Joel, Acuña was on first base. Matt Olson walks behind him, and Acuña's going to second. You know, standard stuff, but he sees a third baseman, Max Muncy, kind of have his back turned. So he just scoots to third base, just like that, just steals a base. That's what he's been doing all season long. 20 stolen bases. He's first in the NL, just doesn't stop stealing bases. We talked about him being a 40-40 guy, potential guy. Unfortunately, he's not on pace for that, but he's on pace for well above 60 stolen bases. Here are his National League ranks. Second in hits, first in runs, first in average, first in on-base percentage, first in OPS, and this one's for you, Joel, tied for first in WAR. He is kicking ass, 2.9 there. He could have the best season for a leadoff hitter of all time. He's on pace to set a bunch of records for leadoff hitters. It's a different type of baseball now with a different mentality with managers putting guys who can really, really hit up in the leadoff hole. So he is not on pace for a 40-40 season. It's just hard to do, only four all time. But he's my favorite player to watch right now. From you, from Taiwan, from Pro Player Stadium there, has he been that exciting to you as well?
Well, Tass, you've seen a lot more of him than I do. We don't get the TBS Superstation here in Taiwan, unfortunately, but I have seen the highlights. And yeah, Tass, I mean, you know, you pretty much nailed all of it. I mean, he's all those things you said. He's an exciting player. He's a dynamic player. He's healthy. He looks great in right field in terms of it. You know, it's taking some pressure off his body. But Tass, just to kind of, you know, get into something slightly negative about Acuña, there was an interesting thread about him on Twitter the other day. Andrea at Scout Girl Report, I guess she's got a pretty big account there on Twitter, and she was basically making a case that Acuña is a subpar defender. Now, she used metrics and Statcast information and, you know, video of him like positioning, getting jumps on ball, but basically his defensive kind of presence and his defensive stats are not that good. Now, that being said, I don't think that takes away anything from the season he's having. Tass, in my opinion, he's the early MVP candidate or MVP winner of the National League so far. But he definitely is not a great defender. But Tass, he just does so much at the plate and on the base pass that I think like any subpar defense is negated by how good he is offensively.
Wow. I gotta say, somebody who doesn't really look at defensive metrics, just strictly the eye test, that he usually passes it considering he's in right field and there's just less of a responsibility since Michael Harris moved into center field and they've allowed Acuña to go to right, especially, as you said, taking the pressure off the legs. I thought he was totally fine out there. He's got the arm, but yeah, maybe he's got some positioning to learn a little bit. Yeah, the fact that he is an everyday player out there, I think it's part of his MVP candidacy. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
maybe I thought
he's not. Yeah, he's not. By no means is he a bad defender. He's basically an average defender. And this Andrea on her, like when she kind of concluded this whole, you know, thread of tweets, she basically said that he's content to basically be kind of an average defender. And she took a bit of heat for that. You know, you can make your own conclusions. But, you know, yeah, he's not, you don't really see him making the highlight plays or the highlight catches. I mean, he does have a good arm. His arm does grade well defensively. But yeah, you know, like in terms of eye tests, you don't really see him making great defensive plays.
All right. I appreciate that. I appreciate the other side. I appreciate the report on the scout report from you, checking that out. He obviously is feeling a lot better and my favorite player to watch. Now let's get to the guy that you call the slickest player to watch in baseball. Number two, Trey Turner. Unfortunately, after that great WBC, has not started well. Joel, is Trey Turner's slow start with the Phillies a cause for concern?
I don't think so. You know, I think it's magnified task for a couple of reasons. One, Philadelphia's coming off that great, you know, magical run they had last year. Expectations were very high going into the season. You know, they went out and signed Turner to a massive deal. He did have a great World Baseball Classic. So I think there were a lot of expectations, not only him, but on Philadelphia. They've started slow. He started slow. So things are magnified. But Tass, just a bit of context here to kind of, you know, show how bad he has started. In six games in the World Baseball Classic, he hit five home runs. In 46 games so far this year, he's only hit four home runs. He has 11 RBIs this year. He had 11 RBIs in the World Baseball Classic, and he hit 391 in the Classic, and he's only hitting 256 now. Now, that's a small sample size. It was only six games. I understand you can't really draw anything from that. But, I mean, yeah, he had a monster, you know, tournament, and he's just gotten off to a slow start. But I'm not concerned about him. I just think he's just off to a slow start. And even he said himself, he did an interview the other day and he owned it. And he basically said, you know, like, I've sucked. And he's not shying away from it. And I respect that, a guy who, you know, has accountability and owns it. So I think the Phillies will be fine. I think he'll be fine. It's just a slow start. It just looks bad with the optics.
So are you still considering him the slickest player, or is he the sickest player now in a negative, now in a negative way, or is he still slick to you?
He's still slick, Taz. You got to stick with him, good times and bad. Yeah, he's still slick. I'm not worried about him. He's still my boy.
Yeah, we're still before June 1st here, when that's sort of the faux line, when everything really starts to mean everything in Major League Baseball. But it has been a bad run. Monday, he had his first hit with runners in scoring position in over a month. So an 0-for-22 slide. And another guy who hits leadoff for the Phils as they kind of switch it up, Kyle Schwarber. He has struggled too. So, yeah, there's some struggling going on in Philadelphia, but not too far back. I say that, but I mean, it's a tough NL West. They're seven back of the Braves, but they have the Mets and Marlins in between them. Marlins, yeah, doing some work there down in Miami. All right, moving on to the next one here, Trey. Or Trey, I called you Trey. I'm sitting in Trey's seat, his normal no dunks seat. He's got it a little lower because he's a big man, so I thought of Trey there for a sec. You're not Trey. Okay. Joel, you got what you wanted. The Yankees DFA'd Aaron Hicks. They designated him for assignment. You've been wondering why they hadn't done that, because he's been subpar to start the season. Now there's a little chatter. I saw Chris Kirshner of The Athletic write about this. Is Josh Donaldson, the next guy to get DFA'd, Joel?
Yeah, Tass, the Hicks thing. Yeah, I mean, that was a long time coming. He hasn't been subpar just this year. He's been a below league average player since 2021. So this was kind of a long time coming. I can understand why the Yankees gave him more rope, because they had a lot of money tied into him. Is Josh Donaldson next? That's an interesting kind of proposition. I've heard and seen the same things. I'm going to say no for the time being, just because he's only played five games this year. He was a lightning rod, you know, for fans last year. He just seemed to bear the brunt of, you know, the frustration and the anger of all the fans. He was awful in the playoffs. But Tess, I will say this. He's still an elite defender. I still feel he's a productive player. He's not what he once was. But I think the Yankees obviously have high expectations going into the season. And losing Donaldson, like I was reading about this earlier, Tess, even if they cut Donaldson, who's going to replace him? They don't have any internal options. There's so many teams that are still in it or are probably going to be relatively in it come the trade deadline. So there's not really going to be a lot of, you know, options in the trade market. I feel like with Donaldson, it's better to kind of go with the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. Kiner Falefa is a utility player. They kind of move him around the diamond. Oswaldo Cabrera, another utility guy. They're playing LeMahieu at third right now, but, you know, again, another utility guy. I think Donaldson stays. Like, this is the last year of his deal. He's a veteran guy. I like Donaldson. I want to believe that he can turn it around. But I think for the time being, the Yankees are still going to give him an opportunity to go out there and be an everyday player. And Boone, you know, said that the other day amidst, you know, some things that Donaldson supposedly said about, you know, he wasn't sure if the Yankees were going to let him come back. He kind of make an offhand remark. So I think he'll be with them for the time being.
Yeah, Aaron Boone seems to love Josh Donaldson. That's obviously in his corner. I think another thing in his corner is a guy like Aaron Judge coming back and rocking on a tear since his injury. He's got 8 homers in his last 9 games. But LeMahieu, as you mentioned, utility guy, but he's filled in a third base really nice. I don't see them moving him. I don't know about the defensive metrics, but watching the Yankees and watching the highlights, he's flashing that leather. Rizzo is a lock at first base. Where's Donaldson going to play? Or are they just going to mix and match with LeMahieu and just have Donaldson as another utility guy? Or is he going to kick LeMahieu out of third base?
Well, I think you could still get LeMahieu the at-bats. Like, you could DH him. You could put LeMay, like you can kind of put him at different positions, you know, around the diamond. I mean, he is a utility player. They need LeMahieu's bat, although he is kind of scuffling right now. But I mean, Donaldson's a third baseman. You can't put him anywhere else. I mean, Tass, it's, you know, you bring up a good point, but I mean, and also Donaldson's making $27 million a year. Do you really want to have him come back and just basically sit on the bench? I think that's a bad look. So I think, yeah, they're just going to put Donaldson at third base. And I think they're going to give him every opportunity to kind of play and see if he can get that old form back. And, you know, if it comes, you know, maybe June or July and he's still scuffling, yeah, maybe the Yankees cut bait on him. But I think for the time being, he's safe. It just doesn't make sense to cut him because they're not going to be any better, you know, by cutting him, because who are you going to put there? I mean, yeah, you can put LeMahieu there, but, you know, you got to think long term. I just think they're not going to get enough offensive production, you know, with the guys they have now without Donaldson.
Yeah, maybe it's just sort of a snowball effect from DFAing Hicks, or they're eating the money there. This is the Yankees. They can eat money, but it would be eating another big chunk of money. Although I'm not really buying this injury story. I don't know if you are, Joel. He hasn't played since April 5th, as you said, hamstring mostly, but sustained a setback slicing his thumb while putting something together for his daughter at home recently. You buying that, Joel?
Something's running Denmark there, Tass. I don't, that sounds very suspicious. Like cutting your thumb. Like, okay.
I mean, it happens.
Throw a Band-Aid on it.
Well, it could be bothersome. You know, we both have kids here in the studio. I've got daughters. I put together stuff. I'm definitely. There's some hazard there, let's be honest. But JD, actually, I was going to ask you, but you don't do anything for your kids. You force your kids to do everything. So there's no way you've sliced your thumb.
How dare you?
No, in a good way. In a good way. You teach your kids
at this point,
responsibility.
They're assembling their own stuff, yes. But
are you buying this from Josh Donaldson?
I'm buying it, sure, yeah. Well, I mean, but I don't want to buy the assembly part is not right. Like, I think it happened opening whatever box the thing that was being assembled was in.
Like, oh, okay.
Box cutters, you know, that's, but you know, cutting yourself while assembling something, it just seems a little suspicious.
Yeah, I like how you're reading into it that he's opening the box. Joel, what do you think he was assembling for his, for his daughter?
Oh. Man, I don't know. I don't have kids. I don't know what kids play with. Like, the last toy I know is a Ninja Turtles pizza thrower, and I know that's probably not what it is. I have no idea what kids play with. I'm sorry.
Maybe it was a Pop It Lock It, that toy that people are playing with. It was just opening a box. I agree with you. Box cutter.
Yeah, box cutter.
Great stuff. I do want to mention one thing, because there was a rare trade that happened between the Yankees and Red Sox. It was a very minor deal. They traded Greg Allen went to the Yankees from the Red Sox, a speedster. He seemingly, according to our man Chris Kirshner at The Athletic, will be on the roster later on in the season, maybe a playoff sort of specialty guy just to steal bases. He was 23 for 23 in stolen base chances in AAA this season, and was showing that this weekend with the Yankees, and that sort of led Hicks to being DFA'd. But just an interesting note. People can reconcile. Teams can reconcile. Even the Yankees and Red Sox making a deal there. So a rare deal. Anyways, moving on here. Number four of the five best things in baseball. Baseball had an encouraging few days at the ballpark, Joel, and I know we wanted to talk about this. Over 1.5 million people attended games this past weekend. That's the best attendance for a weekend in April or May in more than 6 years. It's a pretty specific attendance stat. I get it. But it's still positive. Right, Joel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And Tass, this was very encouraging. And I know when we were talking about this, you are not entirely... You're a bit skeptical on attendance figures, and I get that.
Yeah. I'm on the internet. I'm skeptical of everything, especially attendance figures. I mentioned a co-host on No Dunks, Trey, a little bit earlier. I'm also skeptical because it's fresh on my mind, because we're in Atlanta here. You know, we cover our basketball show daily, and he brought up that the Atlanta Hawks attendance rate this past season was 104%. That mm-hmm. is some bull pucky. Okay, even whatever that 4% is, I don't know. Okay, I'm not calling that bull pucky, but 100%. No, there's no possible way that the Hawks sold out every single game, whether it's even comps. Okay, maybe they gave them all away and that's how they get to 100%, but it wasn't even anywhere close to full. So, yeah, that's why I'm a little bit skeptical, Joel. But as far as this stat goes, I'm buying it. I'm buying that baseball is reaping the benefits of the changes.
Yeah, absolutely, Tess. I think there's a couple factors here. I mean, it's exciting baseball. I still think they're in that WBC glow. Like, we've talked about that before. I think they had a lot of momentum going into the season. I think it's a better on-field product. It's exciting. There's a lot of parity. You know, I feel like in recent years, a lot of teams were kind of like tanking because they knew they weren't going to have, you know, a good team. And, you know, like 5-6 weeks into the season, you know, you're 10-15 games below 500. That's like, you look at the standings. I mean, other than Oakland, I feel like everyone still is relatively kind of not out of it. You know, there's a lot of parity. So I think that's exciting. I think, you know, the people have responded to the rule changes, and, you know, this is encouraging to see. And I hope and I think they will keep this momentum up as the season goes on, because it's good to see.
Absolutely. I was there at the Braves Truist ballpark. Could feel it in the air. Games are moving, and it makes sense that they're back to sort of pre-pandemic numbers. As I said, a big weekend for the first time in 6 years for this early in the season, and a huge Sunday that they had the most since June 28th. Or I'm sorry, the highest Sunday before June since 2018. Again, some cherry pick stats here, but the sped up game is absolutely working. I've even heard critics of other sports be referencing the rule changes in baseball as a benchmark, as a guide to say, hey, baseball changed things, we can change things, as sort of an innovative move. And it's easy to believe these numbers. I don't believe the Atlanta Hawks, even if it's a non-paid attendance, as people are pointing out here amongst the bleacher creatures on YouTube. Totally true. But I'm believing these baseball stats because it is fun to be at the ballpark. And again, the thing is moving. All right, last best thing in baseball, because we got to talk MLB succession. We got to grade some teams. This is a great story, Joel. Dennis Kasumba, a Ugandan catcher. He's an orphan, has been making the waves on social media for months. Tell people about this story.
Yeah, so Tass, Dennis Kasumba, we did a reel on him a couple days ago.
Nice, just nice plug. Nice plug for the Instagram. No underscore bunts or the Athletic Baseball Show. Check it out there. did some numbers there.
It did do some numbers. But yeah, just a truly inspirational story. He's kind of charted his growth and progress on social media. Tass, it's almost like watching a real life Hollywood movie, like you're watching Rocky. He's out there training in the rain, throwing bricks and, you know, jumping up and down with a tire on his back. How can you not root for this kid? You know, like you said, he's an orphan. And Tass, I was, you know, doing research for this today. He was discovered at a butcher shop in Uganda by a player on the Ugandan national team. And he said, if you come to practice, I will feed you, because he was working there just basically to feed himself. Such a great story. You just want to root for this guy. I'm glad that, you know, MLB and these NGOs and Ugandan government officials kind of got together and made this happen, because it's an inspirational story. And not just on a baseball level, but like on a very human level. You want to see this guy do well. You know, he never gives up. It's just infectious watching his videos. And Tass, I also found it interesting too. The Dodgers actually have signed two players from Uganda. I didn't know that. And the Pirates also have a player from Uganda in their organization as well. So, you know, I hope that, you know, other Ugandan kids see this, and maybe this, and not only kids in Uganda, but in Africa and all around the world, really, for that matter, just see, you know, the effort and the work that he puts in. And it just truly is an inspirational story. Just love to see it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go check out The Real. And I would, I'd encourage you just to read about the story overall, because it is a, it's one of those heartwarmers that's been going around for a little bit. And I know once you saw it, we needed to put something together for it, because people, as you mentioned, have been getting behind him and were initially upset because the visa was denied and didn't seem like it was going to happen. But now he will be playing in the MLB Draft League, as it's called, this summer. So good luck to him. Also, just before we get to a quick break, I want to mention a couple comments from the Bleacher Creatures. Chris J says, those cardboard edges will get you, as they potentially got our man Josh Donaldson. There's some deep cuts, yeah. Cardboard cuts are no joke, as Hootsky added, and he also added, probably building a dollhouse, which gave me a quick traumatic flashback, because I built a dollhouse Christmas Eve with Danielle and for our kids. It was tough. It's a tough build. So we got it done. Everybody was happy on Christmas, and it was a great dollhouse, actually.
Wait, you built it like before, like Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
So it would be assembled for the morning,
the big reveal. You know,
you're a good dad, man.
You've been there.
I
think it's a better move than doing it on Christmas Day. I want to give up on Christmas Day. I'm just done. Like that. That particular dollhouse was intensive.
Yeah.
It was like an IKEA build, really. I mean, it was.
Wow.
Anyways, Danielle leads. I got to be honest. I follow.
You just follow orders.
Anyway, all right, we got to take a quick break, but after it, we'll hand out some grades to some teams. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to No Bunts. The reason you want to be with the Bleacher Creatures as they're watching live on YouTube on the Athletic Baseball Show channel is we were just naming different Daves in baseball history as we heard an ad for the product Dave there. So that was a lot of fun. Winfield, Roberts, Martinez, Stewart. And then we got into some Davids, which isn't allowed, like a Justice or a Wells. Daves only.
These are the Daves we know.
Is
that anybody get that reference? No. I'm so goddamn old. Kids in the Hall, anyone?
Oh, all right. Man. No. See way. You later. All right. Moving on here. We passed the quarter pole of the season. We're moving quickly to the third pole. That's not a pole. But the third way mark or third of the way into the season. That's also not a saying. So, Joel, we decided we would grade some teams. We got six teams to get through. Let's start with a pleasant one. What are you grading the Texas Rangers, Joel?
Texas Rangers getting A. I don't see, like, outside of Tampa, they've been the best team in the American League. And I just attribute that to Tampa Bay's, like, crazy start. They've kind of come back to earth a bit, where Texas has been fairly consistent. The rotation task is unbelievable. And keep in mind, too, they've done this mostly without DeGrom. Like, he's been injured for most of the season.
Classic DeGrom.
Classic DeGrom. Evaldi threw another complete game. He just looks unstoppable right now. He's got to be in the conversation for Cy Young at this point. Their bullpen's not great, but Tass, I mean, they've scored the most runs in the American League. They've got a great starting rotation. They've got the co-leader in home runs in Adolis Garcia. They just look really good. And I was skeptical about this team coming in because basically, Tass, they bought a team. They've bought a team over the last 2 years. They've splashed a lot of money in the free agent market, but the early returns this year, they look like, you know, one of the best teams in the American League, if not the best. So Rangers absolutely get an A+. There's really nothing to be critical of them. And, you know, if they can keep this up, Tass, like, they're going to give Houston a run for their money in the division.
Yeah, leading the division right now. The Astros are back, though, as you predicted. They are 8 games above 500 right now and only 2 games back of the Texas Rangers. They are playing extremely well. As you said, a couple of those big signings from a couple off seasons ago now in the 21 offseason and Seager and Semien paying off now. And the Eovaldi one from this offseason, huge. Forever Brave, Robbie Grossman is even working out a little bit. But they've just assembled a bunch of guys. As you said, they bought the team. but, yeah, working right now. Jamie Newberg at theathletic.com. Great breakdown of how they've assembled this team if you have a subscription there. I want to just ask one thing before we move on to our second team. You said they're an A. We had an A+ in our document. Have you changed? Have you?
I did. They're an A+. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. On me. Yeah.
That's okay.
They're an A+. They look the part.
I'm just being a stickler. All right, moving on. The stadium behind you, former stadium anyways, the Florida Marlins. What are you grading them?
Tass, yeah, let's talk about some of those teams that don't get talked about, I feel, a lot. And I'm going to give the Miami Marlins a B. Now, that's kind of strange if you kind of look, you know, at the numbers on the surface. They've got the worst run differential in the National League. But, Tass, they're in a very, very competitive division. They're one game under 500, but they're very, very competitive. I feel they have some very good young players. They've got the, you know, reigning Cy Young in Alcantara. I might be butchering that.
No,
name.
You didn't.
I apologize.
You hit a home run with that one, Joel.
I hit a home run with that. Okay, right out of Pro Players Stadium, right behind me. But yeah, you know, the trade for Luis Arraez. You know, they desperately need off Arraez. Sorry, Arraez. That name, that's a pop out, Tass, right here at Pro Players Stadium. But yeah, like, they've been able, Tass, and this is just this. I wanna make sure I get this stat right. In Miami's nine games in a row and 10 of their last 11, the games have been with a margin of 2 or fewer runs, and over half the games they played in this year have also been decided by 2 or fewer runs. So they're competitive. Like, they're in every game, a hit here, a hit there. You know, maybe they're a few games above 500. They're a good, young, competitive team in a tough division. I don't think it's going to hold over 162 games, but, you know, for the purpose of this exercise, I think they're a solid B. You know, like, they're right in the thick of things. And if they can kind of stick around and keep it around 500, I feel like, you know, maybe they go out and make some trades and get some bats, because that's what that team needs. They've got the pitching, but, you know, they just don't have any offense at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is astonishing to see that this team is 500. I know you say a lot of people don't talk about them. They are one team that I see on TV all the time. Being here in Atlanta, it feels like the Braves are always playing them. And Luis Arraez is one of my favorite players to watch in baseball. Ridiculous defensively. But it is weird because they've got pitching and they don't have hitting. It's weird to see them at 500. The catcher spot is a mess. Gene Segura, he's struggling. Yeah.
Yikes.
And maybe it's because he broke up Spencer Strider's no hit bid in the eighth a while back. That'll teach you. They do have the pitching. Jesus Luzardo, Cy Young winner, Sandy Alcantara actually hasn't started well, but he'll probably bounce back. And exciting prospect, Eury Pérez, the biggest pitching prospect in baseball, and also literally big. He's 6'8", and he's had
a big boy.
Yeah, he's had 3 starts now. fastball over 97, a slider at 87. He's getting whiffs. The spin rate is high. And yeah, just watching the highlights and reading about him, Saris does a great job breaking down pitchers. He's living up to the billing after being called up just three starts into his career. All right, moving on. A team that's bounced back a little bit, but you have a mediocre grade for them, the St. Louis Cardinals, Joel.
Yeah, I'm going to give the Cardinals a C. They got off to an awful start, but they've really rebounded in May. They've won four series in a row. They swept the Red Sox in Boston. They've beaten some tough teams. They're only five games out in the Central. I don't know if that's a testament to how good St. Louis is or how bad the Central is. Right. Maybe it's a bit of both. But yeah, I'm going to give them a C. I had them winning the division going into this year. I still kind of stick with that. Pittsburgh has come way back to earth. I think it's going to be between St. Louis and Milwaukee. I'm going to give them a C just based on a slow start. But Arenado is like, he's caught fire. They're hitting, their pitching's coming back. They're just doing all the things right. I just think, yeah, that April just kind of crushed them. But they've rebounded, and, you know, St. Louis will be fine. I think they're going to win the division.
Yeah, they are lucky to be in the NL Central. That's totally true. It's a lacking division. Same with the AL Central. It's odd. The Blue Jays, that we'll get to in a sec, fifth in the AL East, would be first in the AL Central. Both Centrals struggling overall in both leagues. The Cardinals, yeah, doing enough, even though we talked about they've had sort of a chaotic start with the Wilson Contreras move, getting him out of the catcher spot. He's back to being a catcher. They just created a weird situation there. They won 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, though, and as you said, Nolan Arenado, he's back, another one of the great players to watch in MLB. So, yeah, that was a quick rut that they dealt with, but it seems like they've gotten through it. Let's go to the AL Central. The Detroit Tigers.
No one really talks about Miami.
No, that's
true. No one talks about the Tigers either. We are going deep. Let's give the Tigers some love. They've really kind of been an afterthought, I feel, for the last half decade or so. They haven't really done anything of substance. But they're a pesky team. You know, they are a couple games below 500, but they're only 2.5 out in the Central. And Tass, I think a big reason why, though, is their schedule in April was bonkers. I just want to go over this. They played the Astros, Jays, Rays. They played Baltimore twice. They played Milwaukee and Boston in April. Like, those are some very, very tough teams. I don't care if you're a good team or a bad team. You're definitely going to take some losses in those series. And they opened up May. They went 5-1 against the Mets and the Cardinals. So they've kind of rebounded in May. Riley Green, I really like him. He's a good young player. Spencer Torkelson's another guy. He was one of their top picks. You know, he's slowly putting it together. So, you know, the Tigers are kind of a pesky team. I am going to give them, a B minus. I don't think this is sustainable, because with the Tigers, their pitching is not good. E-Rod is their ace, and if he's your ace, you know, that's going to kind of put a limit as to how far you can go. But they've looked good, you know, through a quarter of the season, and I think they're just going to be a pesky team, you know, to beat, and they're a team that's on the rise. I could see them being, you know, very competitive in a year or two with some of the good young pieces they have there.
E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez, has been pitching lights out. 2.19 ERA through 10 starts, a whip under one. And, yeah, they, as you said, expectations not super high. They benched Javier Baez, their second highest paid player, a little earlier in the season when he forgot how many outs there were. And that's sort of worked. He's bounced back, and the team, obviously, as you said, have been performing fairly well. Quick question, because I know you've been to Comerica Park. It's still what it's called, right? Yeah. Do you love it?
I believe so. Yeah, great stadium. Comerica is a great stadium. It's right across the street, too, from Ford Field. It's kind of like this, I don't know, sports area, and you've got Chelios's bar right there. it's a good spot. Like, it's, I love the stadium.
Gretzky did it first, Chelios. all right, moving on. A couple teams remaining here before we do a little succession recasting with MLB players and figures. The Padres, an interesting one here, Joel.
Padres, task Padres get a D. They have been, you know, they've definitely underperformed. But task with the Padres, it's very simple. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. They're dead last. They're 30th. They're 30th in MLB right now with hitting with runners in scoring position. They're hitting 189. They're just not getting timely hitting. Now, that's probably more bad luck than anything. Like with the offensive talent they have on that team, that's just not sustainable over the course of 162 games. I think it's just a lot of bad luck at one time. Tatis is back. Let's see, you know, how they do like with a fully healthy lineup. I know Machado's out right now, but yeah, they get a D. I mean, they've just, you know, they're fourth in the National League. They're 4 or 5 games under 500. You know, with all the moves they made in the offseason, it's been very disappointing. And Blake Snell has been really, really bad this year. He's striking out fewer batters. He's giving up way more walks, and he's giving up a lot more home runs. So he's kind of the weak link in the rotation at this point. But Tass, I'm not going to be scared away. I still like San Diego. It's still early. I don't think they can get too down in that division because the Dodgers aren't what they were in years past, but they're still a very, very good team, and they are first in the National League West. But there's just too much talent on that team. But, you know, they get a D right now. They're not playing well.
As you said, fourth in the NL West behind the Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and Giants. It's astonishing. They've played 48 games in 23 of them, so nearly half. They've scored 3 or fewer runs with that lineup. And they're 2-21 in those games. If they miss the playoffs, that would be one of the biggest disappointments in MLB history, considering the expanded playoffs, and they're nearly a $250 million payroll behind just the New York teams. So many guys currently underperforming, and the boos raining down at Petco Park at times. So they absolutely deserve a D at this point. Last one here before we move on. You can't be trusted to give an unbiased opinion on this team, but do it anyway. What's the grade here for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Tass, I wrote this one out of sheer anger when we were putting together this show. But yeah, I'm going to give the Blue Jays an F. You know, Tass, this is going to be more therapeutic than me, more than,
that's
anything.
Why we started this show.
Yeah. But no, listen, I mean, they're a team similar to San Diego. They've invested a lot of money in this team. I think they have the 7th or 8th highest payroll. They're a team that should be competing for the World Series. Tass, their last place. It's almost the end of June. Their offense is feast or famine. I feel like they don't have a lot of depth. Their bullpen, which has been their Achilles heel since 2021, hasn't really been addressed. You know, they lose games late. They just piss away so many winnable games. They're a very, very frustrating team to watch. And John Schneider just looked like, what were you doing in that game on Saturday against Baltimore, not knowing the rules? And Manoah had to come out early. It's just really been a comedy of errors. Like in May, they've just looked like an awful team. And yeah, they're last place in your 7th or 8th in payroll. You know, they get an F for me, you know, and that's putting it lightly, because I've said a couple 4-letter words the past week or two watching this offense. I mean, now, you know, law of averages said they had to score sooner or later. They did that in spades last night. I get it. But and Tass, another thing too, they've gone 2-12 against American League East teams in their last 14 games. You're not going to win a division in May, Tass, but you can certainly you can certainly lose it. And you can't be doing that. You know, you can't be losing all these games to divisional rivals. They got swept at home by Baltimore. Yankees took 3 or 4. That one game they did win, Tass, I think they left 15 or 16 runners on. They won in extra innings. They easily could have gone 0-7 last week. So they need to be better. There's been so much hype around this team, and I've bought into it, but I mean, I got to be realistic. Like, I think they're a playoff team, but I don't I just don't see a championship team right now. I don't. I'm sorry.
And then they go and bash the Rays yesterday. They're back. They won 20-1 yesterday. But you're totally right. It's they're feasting or they're famining. They mm-hmm. as you said, yeah, they've got some guys hitting in Chapman, Bichette, Kiermaier has been awesome. Guerrero's been solid. And then the rest, really, really lacking. And I'm with you. I mean, they are a couple games above 500, 26 and 23. Tough division. Can still make the mm-hmm. postseason. But totally fair to say if this team plays anything like they're playing right now, they were not going to win a championship. And they do have those aspirations. And, yeah, tough week. Losing 3 or 4 to the Yanks. Getting swept by the Orioles. Lost their first to the Rays. Nothing worse than losing to the Rays. And then the second game there, they did bounce back for that 20-1 win. Glad they got a win there for Kevin Kiermaier going back, spending so much time with Tampa Bay. But as you said, bad against their own division. I guess tiny, tiny bright spot. The more balanced schedule means that they're going to play their division less, and they're getting a lot of these games out right now. Get out of the way right now, I should say. But, some bright spots. On the mound, Chris Bassett has
been. Rotation looks good.
Yeah. 28 consecutive scoreless innings. Gossman's been good. The pitch clock probably helped Kikuchi. He's been great. Barrios has not been phenomenal. Manoah, as you mentioned, struggling. It was crazy to see manager John Schneider, as you mentioned there. He came out and there's only one mound visit per inning allowed if you're just visiting. You have to take out a guy if you're making a second visit, and he just forgot that his pitching coach Pete Walker had already been out to the mound that inning. I wonder if you can, there's got to be like something that they can do, like for a manager to leave the dugout. Like there's probably, it's got to be like a, you know, one of those like electric dog collars, like a shock collar. Like oh man, I guess we did already hit the mound this inning. Weird stuff there. But yeah, they're a fun team to watch, right, Joel? They get the heart rate up.
Sometimes not in a good way, Tass. They're a frustrating team to watch, but I feel like I've seen this in 2021 and 2022. I wish them, I live and die with them, but they can just be a frustrating team to watch. But I mean, they looked great in April and then they've just collapsed in May. And yeah, last place. Got to be better against the division. So we'll see.
According to Chris J. amongst the Bleacher Creatures, the Jays have scored 43% more runs than the Tigers, by the way. He's a Tigers fan. And I guess you gave him a higher grade. You know, it's according to expectations. It's on a curve.
Sure.
And the Tigers only 2.5 back in the AL Central, even being sub 500 in the Jays, in a tough AL East, being 8.5 back currently right now. It's tough. It's tough being in that division. All right. We got to take a quick break here, Joel, but fun part of the show is coming up. It's MLB Succession. Yes, the TV show. We'll be right back.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to No Bunts. We all love the TV show Succession around here. It's sad. It is coming to an end. The series finale this Sunday. So as an ode to the incredible show, we decided to recast the show with MLB figures. Yeah. Baseball Succession. Why the heck not? Have a little fun here. So Joel, let's go through character by character by character by character. We've got five characters from Succession that we're going to recast with MLB people. Starting with the top, who is Logan Roy in MLB?
Yeah, so Tess, for this, I think, too, we're going to use past and present figures. Yeah, we agreed on that when we were discussing it. George Steinbrenner, no-brainer to play Logan Roy, win at all costs, big personalities, demand the absolute best, and they just refuse to lose. I think this was the easiest one to cast. So yeah, Logan Roy, George Steinbrenner as Logan Roy.
And as we were talking about this, JD, who is a bigger Succession fan than a baseball fan, actually knows George Steinbrenner. That was the one name that stood out to him amongst the cast that we picked. So
yeah, literally the only baseball name that I knew. Oh, probably from Seinfeld, actually.
Ah, right.
Tass, I told you. Tass, we talked about this yesterday. In the
you
fall.
Did.
This is exactly what we talked about. I said, they'll know Steinbrenner. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I could see Steinbrenner described this way from last week's episode of Succession. Actually, I didn't mention this off the top. Some spoilers here or there. I should have mentioned that. If you're like Hootsky here in the Bleacher Creatures, who says, I've never started Succession. Should I tune out? Yes. You may hear a quick spoiler or two, because last week at... Here, I'll give you a break to turn it off. Turn it off now.
Yeah, turn it off. See you later, Hootsky.
See ya. But at Logan Roy's funeral, Kendall Roy got up and described him in a great speech. A vitality. A force that could hurt. That's Steinbrenner in a nutshell. Full of vim. Mm. Great geysers of life, he willed.
Yeah.
So there. That's Steinbrenner. Bang that one out of the park, Joel.
That was easy. That was easy.
Too easy. Okay, let's get to Kendall Roy.
Okay. So, Tass, playing the role of Kendall Roy, we are going to cast Carlos Correa.
Mm.
A couple reasons. I think, Tass, both Kendall Roy and Carlos Correa see themselves as the guy and they want to be the guy, but they don't have what it takes to be the guy.
Ooh.
I think, I think they're good when they have the right people around them. Like when Correa was in Houston, he won a championship. He had a lot of success. But, you know, I think when he went to Minnesota, that just didn't follow him there. Like he's obviously good. I think both are charming villains and they've kind of embraced it. I think both of them see themselves as likable characters. They try to be their best to be likable, but they're just villains. People just don't like Correa. And I think they've kind of embraced it. And Tass, the last reason why I casted Correa as Kendall Roy is both of those guys respectively tried to leave their situations for greener pastures. They wanted to go on to put themselves in a better situation. But Tass, ultimately, both of them ended up just coming right back home. They couldn't leave. You know, Correa, you know, all that drama with him going to San Francisco, then New York, then back to Minnesota. And Kendall Roy, you know, he tried leaving the family fold, doing his thing, couldn't do it, and he came right back. I think Correa is a great pick for Kendall Roy.
And both are damaged goods.
They are damaged goods, yeah.
Yeah, that's not me saying it. That's the medical report on Correa. And Kendall Roy, he's found his way. Can't wait for Sunday. Can't wait.
Has he found his way, Tess?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. I don't know.
For him, Yeah.
We see this time and time again with Kendall. Yes, he just has a spark of, ooh, I'm going to do this, and then he shits the bed. So we'll see.
Exactly.
And there's just so much more to tell, even if it's the same story again. That's why I hate the fact that there's not a fifth season. Give us one more. It feels like it's going to leave us wanting more. Great, sure.
Well, that's what you want.
That's what you want. But also, I mean, we're at a point here where it all can't be tied together in one episode. I mean, I guess, like, there's just more, you know, there's more steps. We could see a Gojo purchase, and we could have another season, no problem, without it totally being repeated, because we've got the new character there in the Swede. It'll make you bleed. You know, that there's lots going on there.
Well, Tass, what about a Succession movie? Because, you know, Entourage had a movie, Sex and the City had a movie. Like, I feel you could, I mean, Tass, I'm with you. I want more. I love Succession, but I feel in a few years, there's definitely still going to be a hunger for this show, for this, you know, and why not a movie? I feel you could tell a story in two hours.
What do you think, JD, on that front?
I say let it go. Let it go. There's going to be, it'll be a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
I think. I have trust in the writers. And I just let it go. Let them go on to write something else, a new series that we'll all enjoy. We don't have to revisit. If anything, give me a spinoff with Madsen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I'm with you. I just want it to be like a regular TV show where it's drawn out and you just hate the ending. Right. In this situation, they really wrapped it up on a high note here. I do think. Can't wait for Sunday. Anyway, all right, moving on. We're recasting Succession characters with MLB figures. And Shiv Roy has to be Miami Marlins GM Kim Ng. Has to be. They're both high-ranking female execs in industries dominated by men. Early in her career, Kim Ng worked for the evil Empire Yankees, just like Shiv worked for the evil Waystar. Kim ended up leaving, and Shiv is currently leaving for Gojo, right? Sure feels like that's what's going to happen. They're both hard workers. Unlike her brothers, Shiv actually had a real job. You know, she's done all sorts of consulting. Mm-hmm. Kim Ng is a pioneer, first female GM in any of the four major sports. And Shiv could have been a pioneer too. She just got fleeced by her dad and looked over for another man. Typical. It could have been Waystar with Shiv Roy at the helm. It could have been, but Logan just couldn't stand for it. So even though he told her, Shiv, you're the one. You're the next one. He backstabbed her and had to give it to Kendall or Roman as he was grooming them for the position. So Kim Ng, first female GM of any of the four major sports, and Shiv Roy. Kim Ng's obviously accomplished a heck of a lot more than Shiv Roy being born into it. but you know, Shiv Roy does have some good character traits and could have done more. If Logan gave her the reins.
Well, he wasn't just going to give her the reins, Tess.
She had to earn it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
she had no experience. He told her what to
do. None of them had experience.
Exactly. None of them are worthy.
Right. So he didn't give it to any of them, although he did tell her that she was going to get it.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, amongst all those three, she would have done a good job. But you're right. At least she did have a job.
Yeah, I'm a Roman man myself.
Oh, really?
Bold. JD, that's bold.
The guy falls apart more than Kendall.
They all do.
Not as much as Shiv.
I got to go back and deconstruct, but she definitely also shit the bed. She was given the reins. She had the opportunity, and she messed it up.
The stain on the bed is a far less shittier than Roman's shit and Kendall's shit. Come on.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But I will correct you on one thing, because you said that she worked at Waystar. She never worked at Waystar. She didn't work at Waystar until Logan offered her the CEO position.
So she never had a job within the
company.
Within the family company.
That was the main gripe with her, was that she had no experience.
the fact is, at least she had a damn job, at least experience working instead of just growing up into it.
Kendall worked in the company.
Yeah. You're working in daddy's company.
Roman went back to the beginning and he did the management training program.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, where he doodled during all the classes.
They did a pitch in a class and they won the pitch from his idea.
Because he's the son of the CEO of the company. That's why he won. Hey, great stuff. Great stuff. Yeah, she could have put some time in. Shiv could have put some time in, like Kim Eng did, who's a baseball lifer, been around for a very, very long time, and interviewed for a bunch of GM positions over the years, and finally happened with the Miami Marlins, where she is currently. All right, moving on to a special character, Roman Roy.
Okay, so Taz, this one took me a while. It was really hard, I feel, to nail Roman Roy, but ultimately I'm going to go with Verdugo from the Red Sox, Alex Verdugo. A couple reasons. Roman is very vocal, and that's a great picture.
Thank you.
Roman is
very we're looking at a picture of Verdugo with some... I don't even know what to call these, the teeth that he has. They're iced out.
They are iced out. Yes. Yeah. Both guys are like very vocal. I think both guys are kind of assholes, but they don't mind. Like, they know that they're assholes. I think they've kind of embraced that. I think both guys carry a big chip on their shoulder, but they're ultimate team players. To me, like, Roman... Up and he's kind of showed flashes of it, but I don't think Roman wants to be the guy. I think Roman has no problem being the guy behind the guy, but he's ultimately a team player. He'll kind of go with, you know, the consensus in the room. And I feel, yeah, Verdugo's just kind of that ultimate team player, like always has your back. So this one was kind of hard to cast. Maybe I missed it. Bleacher Creatures, let us know. But yeah, I'm going to go Verdugo cast as Roman Roy.
It's a tough one. Roman is one of a kind. And the Bleacher Creatures couldn't even help you out on that one. They've got some other suggestions, though. Hal Steinbrenner is Connor Roy, according to Ziggy. Steve Cohen is Mattson. And Ziggy with this one. Now, our next character, Tom Wamsgams, is Billy Bean. Plays it smart but can't get to the top. I don't know if I agree with that. Yeah, so you give me your Wamsgans recast here, Joel. Who is Wamsgans?
Okay, so Tass, for Tom Wamsgams, we... had to go to an old player, Carlos Beltran of the, he played for a couple teams, retired with the Houston Astros. Tass, you gave me a great idea because I struggled with this one too. He's a ring chaser. There's not a lot of those in baseball. Like you said, Tass, and we were talking, there's more of those in the NBA. But Beltran signed, you know, the last year. I think he signed a one-year deal with Houston, finished his career there. Both guys are behind-the-scene puppet masters, masterminds, but you don't kind of really know. Beltran was kind of his name came up a lot in that report. Like, he was one of the key guys, the masterminds that put it together. Both have made very, very questionable decisions, and both did very, very unethical things to get ahead. So Carlos Beltran as Tom, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that last name because I think I butchered it. So yeah, Carlos Beltran, Carlos Beltran as Tom.
Yeah, I said Wamsgams, and it's Wamsgans.
It's Burger. Oh, is it? Okay.
No, there's an N or an M. It's hard to say. It's just two syllables. But Wamsgans. It's a good. You made a good connection, JD. Do you have something for this one? It seems like you're ready to.
No. I'm enjoying the pronunciation of Wamsgans. I realize that I've never said it out loud. I don't think Tom Wamsgans.
Yeah.
What a name.
What is that? What nationality is that?
Well,
is that Dutch?
I think so. Like, because he's from like Minnesota. Like, so maybe.
Oh,
German
good call.
Or,
yeah. Yeah, German. Yeah.
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 There's a Finnish population. There's a Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Yeah. As damaged and as horrible as all of those people are, I got a soft spot for Tom. Sure. Even though he pulled some really, really shady stuff with the election episode, I'm not going to spoil it, but I like he's so gentle. Like he's a bad person, but he's just so gentle. And that scene, that argument he had with Shiv on the balcony, I was like, Tom, you hit me right here. You hit me right here. You're an awful person, but you hit me right here.
They're all awful people. Yeah. That's the thing.
Oh, they're all terrible. Yeah, they're all terrible in their own way, for sure.
Yeah, that's one complaint that people have about the show. Who am I rooting for?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
It's great. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
I often talk about it with Danielle, and I have to say Tom Wamsgans. That's the only time I say it, is when I try and refer to Tom. She's like, who, Tom? Wamsgans, you know, Tom Wamsgans.
He's the only Tom on the show. Yeah. So.
Okay, yeah, that never happened, JD, but I just had to make it up. Anyway, it's the Beltran ring chasing. It's a good connection. He wanted to run with the winners just like Tom does. And as you said, a lot of shady stuff. When they were found to have committed questionable activities, Tom volunteered himself as the scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, Beltran stepped down from the Mets managerial role. He was going to be the manager of the Mets and stepped down after he was known to be part of the Astros scandal when that was revealed. So,
a big part.
Yeah, the mastermind, which Wamsgans is not a mastermind, so it's a bit of a stretch. But I guess he does.
Yeah,
is that what you're giving me a face? Is he a mastermind, JD?
Wamsgans.
I
mean, he's a survivor. He's an ambitious survivor.
Mm.
Maybe second only to Cousin Greg in terms of that, like. Just the ambition and the willingness to do whatever.
Right.
The guy tried to tackle his own uncle at his brother's funeral. Crazy. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I had my head down watching basketball then, but then I looked up. If he tried to make a tackle, that's great.
Well, he did. He didn't. That's right. Roman gave him hell for that. But
he didn't make it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently it's German, by the way, according to our Chris J.
Okay.
The Wamsgans.
Okay.
Good job, everybody. Figured it out. And that would make Cousin Greg Jose Altuve, according to Ziggy. Earnest guys. Not feeling that, Joel. Because we were looking at Cousin Greg. We did so many.
We had to cut him. We couldn't do him. We were both drawing blanks, and you were like, just move on. Just pick someone else. And Das, I honestly was sitting there like in my office for like 30 minutes. I'm like, okay, Cousin Greg. And I wanted to pick a mascot, and you were like, no, 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 don't pick a mascot. I was like, okay, I'm going to pick. So moved on to Tom, and here we are.
There isn't like a bat boy that was found in the parking lot outside of a stadium smoking a joint or something, and they brought him in out of pity and made him a bat boy, and now he's like a manager of the team or something. Like, is there there's not that doesn't exist in the MLB?
Not that I can think of. That would be an amazing story if it did happen. Yeah,
that's Cousin Greg though.
There's the Anthony Rizzo story that you featured on our IG account about Rizzo embracing a bat boy who is being ridiculed for being slow, right?
Oh, for having long hair.
Oh, yeah. For having long hair. Yeah, that was the one. Yeah, that's. Yeah, yeah. Listen, the mascot casting. It wasn't horrible for Cousin Greg. I gotta admit. But yeah, I couldn't lower myself. It would have been all right.
Hmm. Cousin Greg to me is just a useful idiot. Like, I'm sorry. He's he's the least likable guy for me. I just don't like Greg at all. Never have, never will. Sorry. I don't see any redeeming qualities.
He's trying to stand up for himself. Kinda.
I just don't like him.
Anyway, so Altuve wouldn't fit the bill then.
Not feeling Altuve. Okay. Sorry.
Hey. Bleacher Creatures chiming in. Really appreciate it. They do like the Wamsgans, Carlos Beltran connection. We got Logan Roy as George Steinbrenner, Kendall Roy as Carlos Correa, Shiv Roy as Kim Ng, Roman Roy as Alex Verdugo, and Wamsgans as Carlos Beltran. Let us know on our Instagram account, @no_bunts, or jump over to the video on the Athletic Baseball Show YouTube channel. We are there every single week. I can't wait to see what stadium you have for us next week, Joel.
I'll bring something new.
You're going to change it up every week?
Every week, buddy. New stadium, new baseball stadium, all around the world, too.
Yes.
Not keeping it to MLB.
You're global, my man. Just like Waystar, you are global. For our social media channels, yeah, head over to No_Bunts on IG. And if you want a subscription to the best sports writing in the world, theathletic.com/baseballshow or theathletic.com/nodunks. $2 a month right now for, again, incredible sports writing on every sport. Can't wait to see your stadium, Joel. Until then, for JD, for Joel, we'll see you next time.